listening to Harris Smith Radio, Episode 8. Hey there, I'm your host, Wayne McPhail. Well, now winter has dropped like a Canada-sized weighted blanket upon the queen-sized bed that is our country. It's a season of celebration of all manner and of contemplation. So here's a couple of things to think about: the changing role of women in agriculture and the future of the largest agricultural fair in the world. To help you do that, this time out, I speak with Iris Mech, the force behind the Advancing Women in Agriculture Conference, and I chat with the CEO of the Royal Agricultural Winter Fair about produce, horses, and yes, royals. By the way, if you want to read Harrismith Magazine instead of listening to it, you can subscribe to the print version online at harrismithmag.com, and you can find Harrismith Magazine on selected newsstands across Canada. But for now, settle in for the next half hour of Harris Smith Radio. Since 2014, the Advancing Women in Agriculture Conference has brought together women from across Canada to share, learn, and grow as farmers, producers, and entrepreneurs. Over the years, it's seen attendees and the agricultural sector itself change dramatically and for the better. Part of the change is due to the conference itself. I had a chance to speak with the conference organizer, Iris Mech, about the morphing landscape and the challenges of leaning in a sector that's still steeped in isolation. So thank you very much for joining us, Iris. Tell me a little bit about the conference.
Well, the Advancing Women in Agriculture Conference started back in 2014 when I gathered a group of women leaders in agriculture in Canada, brought them together to discuss some of the opportunities and challenges that women face in this industry, and discuss the topics of skills and tools that they would need to hone their leadership skills and be more recognized and appreciated for the contribution that they make in the ag sector.
And when you define ag sector, tell me what you think that encompasses.
We're including all of the women who are farmers, ranchers, women that are entrepreneurs in the ag sector, greenhouse operators, food producers, food processors, women that belong to grower associations, and all of corporate agribusiness.
And do you have a sense of what kind of numbers we're seeing in terms of percentage of male, female in each of those sectors?
In each of the sectors, I wouldn't have the exact numbers, but we know that in 2016, the Consensus of Agriculture named that the number of female farmers in Canada rose by 1.8% since 2011 to 28.7%, which is over 77,000 women in agriculture. So I think they were talking about farmers, but to know how many women are in the industry, there's many. Many women are involved in the agricultural sector.
So that's a really incredible increase. What sparked that increase?
Well, I think women are definitely educated and have the capability of working on a farm in a way that is smart, sustainable, and know how to manage risk. Their impact of their education is leading them to take on a farm operation, and they're no longer just the business bookkeepers or looking after the family and feeding the meals, but they are taking part in the operation. And so I think it's by overcoming some of the big obstacles that were out there and taking the horse by the reins and starting to do business on their own.
So let's talk about taking the horse by the reins, because that's very much of a leadership thing. And I also want to come back and talk about the obstacles as well. But your conference is very focused on leadership. How do you define leadership in terms of what you're trying to instill in women that are coming into the sector or have been in the sector for a while and want to feel more comfortable with being a leader?
Well, I think that women just need to step up to the plate and to pull the chair up beside them for other women. And all of those types of things need good leadership skills. So we created the program that emphasizes the key leadership skills and development opportunities that include things like communications, whether you understand that to be in day-to-day communications, mentorship, coaching, networking, advocacy, which is very important in the industry, financial management and independence. And I add independence because I don't think a woman is successful unless she has her own financial independence. Health and balance of life strategies, health both mental and physical, to be able to look after themselves and their families, and to be able to strike some sort of balance that they not only are committed to their jobs and careers, but also can take on some of the activities that they love to do and probably should be doing. And we talk about career planning and setting goals in all of these areas, and that's what I think leadership components are made out of.
Now, that what you just described could describe a variety of sectors. It doesn't necessarily pertain to agriculture. How do you sort of spin this or see this, I guess, as different for women that are stepping into this particular sector?
You're absolutely right. This is not different than leadership in any other sector. However, there's one thing that's a bit more of a challenge in the agricultural sector is that it is very male-dominated, and many other industries are. But there's also the obstacle of isolation. Of course, farmers are all in the rural areas. Women and men that work in the agricultural sector are in rural areas, and that leads to a bit of isolation where you just feel cut off from your neighbors, your community, the rest of the area around you, and that's the biggest difference.
Right, so it's hard to lean in if there's nobody to lean in with, right?
Well, that's so true. That's so true. It's really difficult, but it's getting better with social media. You know, a lot of women are going on to social media now to read stories of other women and connect with other women. A lot of networks are being formed across Canada of women's groups, both on a urban and rural basis. And conferences are becoming more popular throughout Canada, in each province holding some sort of women's conference where women can get together.
So I want to come back to the idea that you talked about it being a male-dominated field. And, you know, my impression is that it's not only a male-dominated field, but in some ways, and in some parts of the countries, that it's very much of a old-school male-dominated field. That it feels like, in some cases, that women are going to run into attitudes that in other business sectors have, to some extent anyway, not completely, of course, been advanced a little bit, right?
Well, I think we have to challenge the structures that have existed and in some cases exist today that have been proven to be a disadvantage for women in agriculture. For example, sales representatives may come up to a farmyard and the female will be in the yard and the representative may say, "Could I speak to your husband about this issue?" Instead of asking, "Who's the best person to talk about this issue?"
And I just want to stop there for a sec, because that's really interesting. That harkens to what I was just saying, that I think that you would agree that in other sectors, that salesperson wouldn't get away with that these days, right?
I would hope not. But we hear throughout the conferences that we hold that still happens at time to time, from place to place, farmer to farmer. And it is one thing that is really unfortunate. And I think that's why we have to challenge the structures that are in place and set women up for success.
So what other kinds of systemic problems are women facing in the agriculture community because of the male domination?
Well, I think part of it is all of the structure that's been there. When you talk about purchasing equipment, purchasing farm supplies, going to the bank to do your finances, those duties have usually been carried on in the past by the men in the operation. And now more women are, with their education and becoming more involved in the farming operation, are taking that step to be part of that decision making. And I think that that's going to change as we go further along and women are recognized for their contribution and for the role that they play in agriculture.
Are women that are coming to the conference still expressing concern about difficulty with things like getting a bank loan to start a business, for example?
That topic has come up a lot, and that is why we are so fortunate to have the financial institutions all in involved in the Advancing Women's Program because they see a need to be able to communicate to women better. There's no shortage of women in the financial institutions and legal organizations where you can have a good audience with women operators. So I think everyone's recognizing it. It's just a slow train to get moving. And that's why we approach at the conference at Advancing Women, talk about financial management. We talk about your independence in financial management. We talk about how to structure your savings and your finances in regards to registered retirement savings plans and things along that nature. We also talk about succession planning. All these young women that are coming out of university, when you look at 62% of the women that are stepping over the threshold from university into the industry, they're women coming out and looking for a position. These women are going to go into managerial positions, either back on the farm or into the agricultural community. There is going to be a total rise, I think, of women involved in agriculture, and that will change the structure.
I want to talk a little bit about the change of structure of the farm. You said you want to go back to the farm. I mean, as opposed to 20 years ago, even maybe 10 years ago in some communities, the notion of what a farm is, as a, you know, in the past it might have been a farmhouse with, you know, 10 acres or 100 acres of land around it that the farmer family owned. These days, it's a saying, talking about a farm is a very different kind of thing in some cases. Can you talk a bit about that changing nature and the family dynamic that comes into play there?
Well, definitely. The farming industry has changed very much over the last 10, 15, 20 years. And I think a good way of looking at it is that there are more opportunities and challenges for women in primary agriculture who are doing things beyond the traditional keeping up the books and feeding the family. We're looking at ways to, and women are looking at ways to grow the farm, to become more smart, sustainable, manage the risks better. They're looking at the financial opportunities, and they're looking at new opportunities while figuring out how to oversee and manage their farm. They're looking at doing it in a sustainable and profitable way. I think there's nothing but growth and opportunity there that's much different than there was in years past.
I want to still touch on the family for a bit here, that because one of the interesting paradoxes that I think women face in terms of role is that the role of woman as nurturer of a family is one of the things that is causing salespeople to say, hey, little lady, can I talk to your husband, right? But the flip of that is, in fact, that that has been a role for women. And so I want to use that as a stepping off point to talk about health, because when you're talking about women and health, particularly in agriculture communities, women aren't only concerned with their own health, and I want to touch on that too, but also with the family health, right? It's they're the holder of, they're the nurturer role, right?
Absolutely. When you look at the role that women have played in the agricultural sector, particularly to farming, females have been farming partners for as long as there has been farms and as long as farms have existed. They just rarely get identified. So often the female in the farming operation becomes invisible because of her contribution can't be measured. We can't measure the value of her looking after the family, making sure the kids are dressed, fed, and involved in activities, making sure that the mental health of the family is good and sound. Those are all things that can't be measured. So I think that in the past, that has never been something that we've looked at and said, this is really important in the agricultural sector, really important in the community, really important in the farm operation. It was just a given and therefore perhaps a little bit invisible. And now I think that that role is changing. It's becoming more important, especially today when stress is on everybody's mind. There's so many things to do. There's a lot on everybody's plate. And therefore, I think it's most important for females to take care of their health. And they should do that first, because without their health, they can't properly look after their family's health. So we really stress that for mental and physical health, that is number one for producers. that they should look after themselves and be able to take the time and do the things that are going to bring them a little bit of peace of mind, some exercise, eating well, and maintaining a good self-health strategy. Yeah.
It's sort of like the airline warning of put your own mask on first, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. If you're not breathing the oxygen in, you're not going to be able to help the next person. So that's what we try to do. And that's why Advancing Women, I think, is so successful, because it gives the women that attend a chance to recharge, refocus, re-energize themselves. They're meeting women that are all passionate about the same industry that they are. They're all passionate about the same facets of the industry. So when they come into Advancing Women, they have what they call, sometimes they call themselves, this is my tribe, this is my community, where you don't have to explain what you do. People already understand where you're coming from. And this is a tremendous way to be motivated and inspired and just building your network so that you can go home and be able to carry on that relationship and come back year after year, conference after conference, and continue to build that relationship.
I want to talk a little bit about the conference and the kinds of folks that are coming. You know, we talked a lot about families, of women in families, but there are other groups that would be involved in the industry, and I'm thinking of things like co-ops or people who are going out on their own, just a solo career in agriculture, same-sex couples. What are you seeing in terms of a mix of folks that are coming to the conference and so are representing women in agriculture broadly across Canada?
Our audience consists of anywhere from 400 plus to 600, and we usually have representation at each conference, the West and the East, from women across the sector, farmers, ranchers, entrepreneurs, grower association representatives, corporate agribusiness. And just in the last few years, we've added a university and college student part, where we now have up to 38 students that are sponsored every conference to attend the conference and be able to start building that network and learning these skills that aren't particularly taught in the universities and colleges right now. Most of it is production. So they have a great opportunity here to step up to the plate, get ready to cross that threshold. And we're seeing a lot of younger women come into play at the conference, women that are interested in the transition of the farm with the family succession plan. So they're preparing for taking their university, going back to the farm, and taking over the farm in step. So we see a lot more younger women coming to the plate. And the best part about the conference is when we see three or four generations come to the conference. We've got women with young babies in arms, a little bit too young to learn about leadership, but we certainly have grandmothers, mothers, and daughters and nieces coming to the conference and making it a family affair, which really builds on their relationship and allows them to talk about these things later and after the conference and keep that motivation and inspiration going. So we're delighted to have all the generations attend, and we're seeing a good change in diversity. There's women that are coming from all walks and cultures to the conference, and we welcome everybody to attend.
So let's talk about the baby that's maybe too young to learn about leadership. How do you imagine that when they are old enough to talk about leadership in, you know, maybe 10 years, 15 years, how do you think the agricultural industry is going to change for them over that period?
I think it'll be very different in 10 years' time from where it is today. It's taken a long time for us to get to this point, but even through the Advancing Women's Conference, I think we've been able to move that needle, to just have everyone recognize women and the role that they play and the contribution that they make to the industry. Over the last 6 years, we've seen a lot more publications feature stories about women that run their own operation, women that share in an operation. For a time, you saw a lot of advertisements in the last 4 years where organizations have used women in their graphics to promote their products and services. So I think that we're seeing that needle move, more people and organizations are building their strategies and policies for inclusion and diversity. And I think we're going to see nothing but a little bit more rapid change than perhaps what I've seen in the last 6 years since we started Advancing Women and in my career since 1979.
Well, thank you very much for doing the conference, and thanks for leaning in with us today to talk about it.
Well, thank you very much for your interest, and I invite every woman in agriculture to attend AWC.
That was Iris Meck, who spoke to me from Calgary, where the prairies are wide and the women are wise, and not the other way around. Just after the First World War, a cluster of classically inspired buildings near the waterfront of Lake Ontario rose. The Royal Coliseum and the ancillary buildings has, for 97 years now, housed the Royal Agricultural Winter Fair, a celebration of the produce, livestock, and skills that have brought food from the farm to the table for almost a century. I had a chance to recently talk with Charlie Johnson, the CEO of the Royal, about the celebration's past and its upcoming royally important centennial. Here's our chat. Mr. Johnstone, thanks very much for joining us today. You know, I'm really interested in the history of the Royal Winter Fair. It was started in 1922, just after the First World War. What was the purpose of the Royal Winter Fair back then?
Well, I think the purpose was to showcase the best of agriculture in all breeds and disciplines from across the country under one roof. And that ended up being in downtown Toronto at Exhibition Place.
And was it a celebration for Canadians, for Ontarians? Was it seen as something to put Toronto on the provincial map or worldwide?
No, very much on a worldwide and national scale. I mean, and the Royal continues with that pedigree, that it is a world-class event from its early inception and continues to be now hosting many. I mean, this past year we hosted 12 national shows. So it is the best of the best have always been competing at the Royal, and that's what we continue to do today.
I'm recording this from Hamilton. I understand that Hamilton was vying for the Royal right back in the 20s.
That's correct. In the late 1900s, I mean, it would have been about 1919. It came down to two cities, one of which was Hamilton and Toronto. And Toronto City Council stepped up and provided the land and commitment to build the buildings that are down here at Exhibition Place. So whether it's the Coliseum, the Horse Palace, and the adjoining buildings were purpose-built for the Royal.
So that was back in the 20s. Now we're, you know, way past that. You're coming up to, you just celebrated your 97th fair, and you're coming up to your 100th anniversary. So I want to talk right now about what is the purpose of the Royal Winter Fair now? How has that changed since the very, very beginning?
Well, certainly it has evolved with the times, but it remains at our core an agricultural fair. So as I said earlier, it is about celebrating the best of the best in any of the competitions. And that could be we have 200 different agricultural competitions. Could be jams and jellies and butter tarts to some of the breeds and cattle. And of course, the number one indoor horse show in North America. And since its inception, the Royal has really been about celebrating the country coming to the city once a year. And I think now we're as relevant or more so than we've been in any time in our recent history. We are now one more generation removed from the family farm. Lots of people don't have access nor understand how food gets from farm to table. And it's at the Royal where you can ask those questions of farmers, producers, to better understand how best to feed your family. And of course, the 15 to 20,000 kids that we get coming in organized school groups, this is often for many of them the only opportunity they have to see farm animals. So, you know, it is it's a wonderful event. And as you say, coming up to our 100th anniversary, which is obviously very special.
Now, you've got, I think this year you had like 1,200 youth competitors. So how do you sort of tap into, you mentioned that, you know, you're a generation removed in some cases from having a family farm. So how do you tap into youth competitors these days?
A lot of that is done through our friends at 4-H. These are areas that are set up and clubs that are set up throughout various counties across the country. And they would compete within their own county to qualify to come to the Royal. Everybody qualifies in a different region to have the right right to then compete on a national scale at the Royal.
And it looks like you're really sort of shifting. I noticed one of the things that you've adopted in the last little while is craft breweries. I noticed Nickelbrook in Burlington, I think, won this year, right?
That's correct. And I think that's, you know, part of changing demographics and changing tastes or evolving tastes. You know, the craft beer, for example, there's lots of craft beer festivals that happen across the province, but it's only at the Royal where you can really understand what goes into the product because it's all agriculture-based. So it's not just about the liquid, it's about the hops, the wheat, the barley, et cetera, that goes into making that. And so you get a better education about what goes into your beer or cider, for example, with Ontario Apples. And the more educated you are about your product, the more you enjoy it. So right. it's a great fit and attracts a different demographic coming down to the Royal.
Now, we talked about history. You're about 3 years away from your 100th anniversary. So what are you planning for that? Because I know you're working on the 100th right now. So what are you working on? What are you thinking about?
We are certainly working with the committee now already struck to execute what would be just an unbelievable centennial celebration for the Royal coming up in 3 years. So plans are underway, whether it's working with our friends in England and Buckingham Palace with respect to Royal visits, whether it's increasing the level and scope of our competitions, whether it's expanding the number of days. All of those are being looked at on how best to put the best foot forward for our 100th anniversary coming up in just a few short years.
Now, it was King George V that sort of gave it the royal title, right? So do you have any sense of who might be coming from the royal family in 3 years?
We do not at this point, but we've certainly been working with them. We've had Prince Charles has been here. Prince Sophie was here. Princess Sophie was here just a couple of years ago. Princess Anne has been here. Of course, Prince Philip has been here. So, you know, there is a direct connection with the family, and it would be timely for our 100th anniversary to be working with them.
Well, thanks very much for filling us in on what's been happening with the Royal over all the decades, and best of luck planning for your 100th anniversary.
Thank you very much, and thank you for your continued support.
That was Charlie Johnson of the Royal Agricultural Winter Fair, who is already practicing his polite bow. So, here we are at the end of this episode of Harris Smith Radio. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please consider subscribing to this podcast on Apple iTunes or in your favorite podcast player. And please, tell your friends and family. Got feedback? We'd love to hear it. You can email us at letters@harrismithmag.com. That URL, harrismithmag.com, is also where you can order subscriptions online. And you can find Harris Smith Magazine on selected newsstands across Canada. Until next time, for Harris Smith Radio, I'm Wayne McPhail. And also, until next time, remember these four words: make, grow, sustain, share. Tune in for the next episode of Harris Smith Radio.